Hello, I'm Alex Rathgaber, and you're listening to Ticket A42 with Australia's John O'Hara.
Hello and welcome back to Ticket A42, Australia's leading theatre podcast created in conjunction with the team at AussieTheatre.com. I'm your host, John O'Hara, and each month I sit down with one of our country's leading and most successful artists to talk all things theatre, what makes them tick, what turns them on. So speaking of being turned on, I think there will be a lot of people swooning over my next guest. He's my old whopper mate, and he's one of my oldest and most favourite friends, and he's quickly become a regular on the Australian theatre scene, playing leading roles across the globe in shows including The Phantom of the Opera, The Boy from Oz, The Drowsy Chaperone, An Officer and a Gentleman, and he's about to open in Opera Australia and John Frost's restaging of Anything Goes. He's also one of the top 25 hottest men in music theatre for 2014. Please welcome my old friend Alex Rathgaber.
G'day, Jono.
How are you?
It's good. I'm so happy to be here.
Thank you for coming on board. Now, Al, as we interview you today, you're in preparations to start rehearsals for Anything Goes, having only just really finished Next to Normal in Sydney at the Hayes. Crazy different shows, crazy different demands.
One extreme to the other.
Yeah. So how's prep going for Anything Goes?
Good. It's great. I mean, I've done the show before, so that's kind of a little bit relieving, I guess, because I sort of know what I'm in for. But yeah, I'm hitting up the dance classes and I've been working on the material and, you know, hitting up Pit Fit. With Josh Pitterman.
All right.
And Ellen Simpson doing the old, what's it called? Stage strength classes.
Oh, yeah, because she teaches at, for people that don't know, Josh Pitterman, who's a performer, a well-known performer in his own right, has a fitness company called Pit Fit in Melbourne.
That's amazing.
And I've been to one class, but it's kind of evolved in the last few months, right?
Yeah, the whole focus is fun, first and foremost, but also small group exercising. Yeah. So it's really all about functional training. And and so he's designed all this stuff for performers, which is just so tailored for what we do. It's perfect.
For performers, by performers.
That's it.
And so Ellen
Simpson... He should use that.
He should. I should copyright that. And Ellen Simpson's teaching a class down there, right?
Yeah, stage strength.
Yeah.
Amongst other things,
I think. So she's turning your cores on.
Yeah, it's full on. It's like this amazing combo of yoga, Pilates, dance, bar, like extend bar sort of style stuff. And then a few things that she's, I think, kind of just made up on her own. And
amazing.
And you use those Bosu things to balance on. And when I first did it, I was all over the shop. I'm falling off left, right and center. And after a few classes, I was like, I'm doing it.
I can do it. And so Anything Goes has tap dancing in it. So you're in the tap classes.
It does. I'm not sure how much tap there'll be for me. Last time, because it was the production company version, it was a reduced big version of the title song, Anything Goes. So Wayne, Scott Kermond and I at that point in the show are gangsters.
Yeah.
And we just make a little sort of cameo appearance in disguise. And I think in this version, it's going to be obviously the full version.
Yeah.
So I think it'll be a bit extended.
Yeah.
So I'm looking forward to that. And I've been doing classes with Eden Reed and other, you know, jazz classes with Mikey Ralph. And
amazing.
Dana Jolly.
Yeah.
Love a bit of Dana.
You're just dropping names today.
Yeah. Okay, I won't do that anymore.
No, I like it. I like it. So how different do you think it is, having just done Next to Normal, how different is it working on a small independent show and then working on kind of a big blockbuster like Anything Goes? I know that that's not your first big blockbuster. So, you know, the experiences would be different.
Hayes Theatre experience was... And that show, especially Next to Normal, being a cast of 16 and, you know, a band of six and in such an intimate venue was just so challenging, so confronting and so, you know, you cannot get away with anything. Mm. The audience is right there. They're able to see your eyelashes, you know.
when I saw it, you guys were sweating.
And sweat, I was going to say.
So
oh, my God. It
Maddie
was
O'Donnell's
so hot.
Chest was just, yeah. Like, her kind of, yeah, her whole chest was just sweating. It was full on.
Oh, it was a marathon for Nat.
Yeah.
And for Ant, yeah. Harkin, just crazy. They were just, if I'm, because I had a little change station right next to Ant backstage, and every time he was just running off stage, getting changed and running straight back on.
Yeah.
It was mental.
Yeah.
But yeah, so there was just that intimacy, and the nature of that material was so, yeah, just so penetrating.
Yeah.
I think when you're on a massive stage, obviously physically you have to fill that stage,
yeah.
And vocally, like, it's just, it's such a different beast. It feels like doing a completely different job in a lot of respects.
Yeah. Do you think that one, having done one, it kind of feeds the other, you know?
Definitely.
Yeah.
Yeah, because you're still, I mean, there are obviously, you know, a huge number of things that relate to both stages.
Yeah.
But definitely having worked on a more intense, smaller ensemble piece to carry some of that into a bigger show. And but yeah, no, Anything Goes is just such a feel good,
yeah,
you know, farcical, crazy, high energy piece. It's hard to find too many links between those two pieces.
Yeah, sure. Well, you mentioned before that it's not the first time you've played the role of Billy in Anything Goes. You played it for the production company season.
Yeah.
So revisiting the role a couple of years later, I talked to Lucy Durack about this with Glinda in Wicked. She just loved that she got to revisit it a couple of years later, kind of with more life information. Like, do you feel a bit the same?
Yeah, well, it all kind of remains to be seen, to be honest. I know that working with a completely different cast and on different stages, because I've never done the Princess Theatre or the Opera House or the Lyric at QPAC. Mm-hmm. It's all first time for me. I've never, although we've appeared together in little concert sort of things, I've never worked with Caroline in this sort of way. So I can't wait to do that. Mm. And I think, you know, we obviously do a lot together, and I think it'll just feel so different.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's really exciting to be working again with Todd and Wayne.
Yeah. And also the creative team, because you've worked a lot with this particular creative team.
Yeah,
Dean Bryant and Andrew Holsworth and Matthew Frank?
Peter Casey.
Peter Casey, yes. Sorry, my mistake. But you've worked a lot with this creative team, and you seem at home with this creative team. So,
oh, they're just incredible. You know, it's really quite an amazing rehearsal room to be in.
Yeah.
The things that I've done with them, obviously this last time, and Officer and a Gentleman, and the Drowsy Chaperone, and a few others.
How important is it for you to feel able to feel safe and able to play with a creative team? Like, you know,
oh, so important.
Yeah,
it's everything.
Yeah,
yeah, absolutely everything. To feel that they've got your back, but at the same time, I always feel with Dean and Andy that they know how to push me, and they know, like, yeah, it's a really, I find that necessary to have that little thing that tips me into an area that I'm uncomfortable to, and to sort of challenge me to take it a bit further than I might otherwise have done, and I always know that it's going to be a huge kind of growing experience.
Yeah. Do you head in the meantime?
Yeah.
Is there
always?
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm constantly doing my own head in.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. No, okay. They're really amazing. And the thing I was going to say is that it's always such a dynamic experience.
Yes.
Because there's a pace and a vitality.
Yes.
And what's that word? A sense of agency about the way they interact with everyone. The stakes are really high, and they expect a lot. And they have a really clear understanding of everything, and you know, like, you walk into a dance call with Andy, and it's, you just feel there's like this fire in the room, and it's the same with Dean. It's really exciting.
Yeah. I've never worked with Dean as a director, but I've worked with Andrew Holsworth a lot, and he kind of, him and Ross Coleman kind of gave me my break into the industry back in the day, and I did Shout with them, and then, you know, Dusty with Ross, and Leader of the Pack with Andy and all of this. And I agree with this. Andy expects so much of his dancers, but in return, you kind of get more. And I always, because I don't really consider myself a dancer, but Andy treated me like one. And so you have to kind of come up to his game. And you sink or swim, you know? Totally.
And I know that we both went to classes at the Dance Factory, like the old Dance Factory, where Andy was taking classes weekly and I was going religiously. I think you probably even took me along to my first class.
Probably.
And I kind of just went week after week after week, and he just pushed and pushed and pushed. And I've been lucky enough to have him, really kind of challenging me like that ever since.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, that's awesome. Yeah. Hey, now, for people that don't know you very well, you're a very healthy guy in a kind of holistic way. Like, you eat really well and you exercise a lot and you love yoga and you journal and you write and you read and you meditate and contemplate. I just made you sound like a basket case. I didn't mean to.
Well, I am.
How important do you think those kind of rituals are in kind of maintaining a healthy balance to your life when you're working and when you're not? Because to me, it just looks like that stuff like makes you tick. And
absolutely. Yeah. I don't know. I don't really draw any like line between when I'm working and when I'm not in those sorts of things.
Yeah.
I think when I'm not working, I need all the kind of inspiration I can get to kind of to sustain me, to feed my soul and to keep me clear and focused and to build my confidence, because I find I really struggle with confidence and with
even when you're working.
Absolutely. I'm always second guessing everything. It's not uncommon. We all kind of do it to a different extent, but all of those things, the clearer I can be, the more kind of good I can feel in my mind and body and everything, the more, I feel ready, you know, and I always want to feel ready for whether it's an audition or whether it's the actual show or just actually, often it's just switching off, letting go of everything, you know, tuning out as much as tuning in.
So if someone came to you and said, hey, Al, I need a class to go to or a way to kind of focus and relax, and you know, what would your advice be as someone that kind of, you know, is you're so kind of knowledgeable about all of that stuff, I think, you know,
I would I would, I don't know, probably I'd say try some yoga classes.
Yeah,
I absolutely swear by yoga.
Yeah.
And
how many have you sworn by it? Have you done it a long time?
I did my first yoga class, I think, from memory, because Verity Hunt Ballard and I were in the same class at WAPA, and I remember doing something with her. I may be confusing this with Tai Chi, but we did something. It probably was a fusion of yoga and Tai Chi and
yoga.
But it was on the lawn at WAPA, right near that amphitheater there, and that was like my first little experience of it. But my actual first class was on New Year's Day 2004, my first year out of WAPA.
Wow. Okay.
I was living in St Kilda.
Yeah.
And I had joined up the Sea Baths gym there, and they were offering a 2-hour New Year's Day class, like, you know, start the year off fresh and vital. And so I went, yeah, I can do that. Cool. And it was amazing. And I've haven't looked back.
Haven't looked back.
but I've done lots of different yoga. I had a few years where I was addicted to Bikram.
Yes.
And
that's too hot for me. I can't do it.
It's bloody hot.
Yeah.
It's so hot. And it's a little bit repetitive. I got to, I kind of got to the point where I was like, it's the same every time. The same, everywhere you go, which is probably what most people love about it, because it's just that they know where their edge is with each of the poses, and they know what the benchmark is, and it's just that sort of structure.
Uh-huh.
But I love going to, my favorite now is Power Living.
Yes.
And you know, you get a bit of music and you get some, each teacher has their own individual flavor and there's flow to it. And so you get a much stronger upper body workout and all that sort of stuff. So,
amazing. My favorite's Power vinyasa flow. I'm a bit of a... Is that the same?
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. Yeah.
It's just a few degrees cooler and... Yeah, I mean, I did some with you in Melbourne.
Yeah, yeah.
You like it a bit more kind of...
At the old yoga flame.
Yeah. Yep. You like it a bit more cardio than I do. I think I like to slow it down.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. You like your yin style.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yep. Hey, now, you've worked on the West End in Phantom of the Opera as Raoul, and then you spent a little time in LA a few years ago. Remember that?
God. Why? Why did I do that?
Well, no, but I want you to kind of... Because you're the first person that I've interviewed on this podcast that has really worked overseas successfully, you know. And so, because to me, you kind of went to London and you got into Phantom of the Opera relatively quickly and you had this lead role. And then, yeah, you went to LA for a bit too and you kind of tried it out and things were starting to happen. And then you came back to Australia. Mm. So, I mean, lots of people kind of come back because nothing happened for them, but... It happened for you. So what's different about... Why did you come back? And what's different about working over there?
I came back for a couple of reasons. A, my visa ran out.
Yeah.
I used it all up on Phantom. And also I was homesick.
Yeah.
And the weather and all that whole experience. And doing a show like Phantom, which is so dark and intense and kind of depressing in lots of ways. You know, the combination of all those things and just being away from home and everything. I just wanted... When I came home, I actually just wanted to come home for summer.
Yeah. Oh, so you intended to go back.
Yeah, and I intended to come back and get my next visa, the next stage of visas, and at the end of summer, go back. And then by the time I got home and spent a couple of months here, the global financial crisis hit and border immigration shut down a whole lot of visas, and I couldn't get one.
Yes,
and in fact, I haven't been able to get one since.
Right? Okay, I didn't know this.
Which is the truth? Yeah. So they used to be a highly skilled migrant visa, which if you had a degree, which obviously I do from WAPA, you weren't a certain amount per year and all that sort of stuff, then you could get over there as a highly skilled migrant. But they've made that so difficult.
Yeah.
So truth is, I would love to go back.
Yes.
But I was coming home and I actually had a invitation from the production company to play older Patrick in MAME. And that actually kind of made the decision for me because the timing wise, I flew home and 6 days later I started rehearsals and I just went, well, that's a sign. So I decided to do that and then... But it was a really tough decision actually because I went over to London and just kind of landed Raoul in Phantom.
Yeah.
It was just like my dream come true.
Yeah.
Just I remember writing to everyone who'd ever helped me along the way, just going, I can't believe this has happened. Thank you so much.
Yeah. And you worked with,
Ramin Karimli.
Who's like a massive Broadway star. Was he a huge star then, or was he kind of just...
No, he wasn't. Yeah. So, it was, and it's quite amazing to look back and go, we started the show together.
Yes.
And he'd been doing it for a year already as the standby.
Uh-huh.
And he'd played Raoul a couple of years before that, so he was obviously very much part of the family and all that sort of stuff. And there was a buzz around him.
Yeah.
But I didn't quite understand, none of us, I think, knew how huge it was going to get.
Yeah.
Obviously. But I definitely knew that I was in the presence of some extraordinary talent.
Yeah.
Like, he just...
And you count him as a friend now, right? You know,
absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. We haven't had a huge amount of contact since then, but I mean, I count him as a friend and I still count him as a massive idol of mine.
Yeah.
It's amazing. And we had a very, really special connection in the show. I just loved doing that show with him. There was an energy together on stage. It was really exciting. But it was, and it really, it fueled my performance so much, what he was doing. It was really exciting.
So many people talk about when they want to go, to London or try and get a visa to work on in the States, the standard of performers? You know, is it harder to get work over there? Are we better singers? Are they better dancers? You know, what's your opinion on that, having worked successfully in London and in Australia?
I definitely had moments of feeling a little bit frustrated.
Yeah.
Very frustrated.
Yeah.
By the level of commitment from the ensemble at times. It's just a whole different situation over there because...
there's so much of it?
Well, especially with a show like that, people have been doing it for years and years and years. Yep. You know, there are people in our cast that have been doing it for, you know, over a decade and nearly two.
Yeah.
And several of them. And while I say, you know, you can understand how they get into the habit of it being a job and getting on the train and going to work and, you know, after that many years of doing the same thing, on the other hand, some of those people, now that I think of it, were extraordinary the way they'd come in, considering how many years they've been doing the same show, the energy that they would bring. So, but I definitely did feel like very proud of our industry in Australia. And there's something about the brevity of the show's durations here, I think, that really enhances the kind of celebration that you feel when you get into a rehearsal room and when you get on stage and you don't know how long it's going to last, you know, and actually, you know, it's not going to last too many months like these days. So there's just like a, let's make the most of this, you know, let's all jump in together and make it the most special experience it can be on stage and off.
Yeah.
And I really feel that at the moment, and you see so much of it on social media and stuff these days, like you see everyone just going, you know, it's party time.
Yeah. And then I think when you get, like, I mean, I'm doing Wicked at the moment and I've done it for nearly 3 years, and you kind of think this only happens like once or twice in your career. So when you do get those ones that do run that long, you kind of, as frustrating as it can be, because it is sometimes, you just know that you are really lucky and you have to, it's not going to come along.
But we in Phantom, we had Ramin, who's Iranian-Canadian, and we had a girl named Sophia Escobar, who I just saw the other day. He's on one of the judges on Portugal's Got Talent now. She was one of the cover Christines, and she went on to play Christine for, I think, a few years after that, and beautiful voice and just gorgeous girl. There were other people from different parts of the world, and you know, you get that kind of amazing, you know, hodgepodge of different cultures.
That's
really cool.
So would you go back?
Absolutely.
You probably would at some point.
I've always looked at, you know, someone like Caroline O'Connor, and thought, I want to do that.
Right?
You know,
film, TV, theater, Broadway.
I mean, call me mad.
Yeah.
But you know, it's quite an extraordinary kind of career that someone like
also,
her has created, and there's only her, and you know.
And she didn't really hit it until, I mean, she was always working, and that's so disrespectful, she didn't really hit it. But she kind of like exploded, you know, later in her career on a world scale, which is so thrilling and
inspiring.
Yeah, inspiring
just
for
so
all
inspiring.
Of us.
Inspiring.
Yeah. Hey, so you grew up in the Victorian town of Horsham.
Yes.
And you boarded at Xavier College in Melbourne.
You've been on my Facebook.
So, but knowing and having spent time with your family, there seems to be no kind of, you know, thriving theatrical gene running through the bloodline. Although your dad might disagree with me.
After a few reds.
So just briefly, like, how does a kid from Horsham go to Xavier and then end up at WAPA? Because you were straight out of school at WAPA. Something must have happened.
It definitely happened.
Yeah.
I mean, obviously, Mum and Dad sent me to school, so I was lucky enough to have that experience. And I'd been a singer since I was little, started in a choir and did all the local shows in Horsham and stuff. And then I remember Mum wouldn't let me do the musical when I went to Xavier in year 10, because she was like, no, you know, you've come from Horsham, it's a whole different level of of education up there. You've got to spend your first year focusing on making sure you're up to scratch and da da da. I topped the year in maths, and then I was allowed to do a musical in year 11 or 12.
Yeah.
And there was a teacher there who taught maths and science, and his name's Andy McCalman, and he's no longer a teacher. He's a real estate agent now. But he sang at a mass that I went to, and I was just blown away. He sang "This Is the Moment," and Jekyll and Hyde happened to be my first ever CD that my uncle gave me.
Nice.
Which I listened to on Christmas Day years beforehand. When we were living on our farm, I pulled it out one day, months later, and I listened to it again, having listened to it the first time going, why did he give me this? This is awful. He doesn't know me at all. Then I became obsessed with it and with Anthony Warlow for years. And so by the time I got to Xavier and listened to Andy sing "This Is the Moment," and I went up to him either that day or the next day to his office and asked him if he'd teach me singing.
Yeah.
He had a phenomenal voice and he didn't teach anyone. And so I became his first and only student, and he just nurtured my talent for 3 years.
And he
years.
Just kind of intrinsically knew how to teach you to sing.
Yeah. Well,
that's
he
amazing.
Also he also had a huge idolization respect for Anthony Warlow.
Yeah.
And for a lot of that material, and he'd done a bit of professional work in Crusade, the musical, amongst other things.
Oh,
I think.
Gary Young,
Once Upon a Time.
Gaza.
We just hit it off, and he thought I had potential, and so he just pushed me for 3 years, and then, to cut a long story short, I did all the shows and he directed the shows and he became head of performing arts and all that sort of stuff.
Yeah.
And he actually took on a few more singing students privately after that as well. But then he told me, I was halfway through year 12 and I was studying chemistry, biology, maths, Japanese, and I'd done music the year before and English. And I was hating all of them. I was like, why have I chosen all these sciences? This is disastrous because I have no passion for any of this. I went to the careers counsellor bawling my eyes out, and Andy said, you've got to audition for Whopper. There's this place called Whopper. And I was like, okay, cool. I'll find out about it. And so he said, yeah, there's a couple of old Xavier boys that have been to Whopper. You should get in touch with one of them. And he said, Anthony Harkin and Simon Gleason. And I think there might've been a couple of others, but I ended up getting in touch with Simon Gleason.
Yeah. Who's a mate. He's and now Anthony Harkin's your mate. They're both my mates too.
We're all mates. I got in touch with Simon, and being the guy that he was and is, obviously, he came into Xavier. He was a boarder as well, and had also been vice captain of the school, like I was. And he came in and coached me through some songs. He gave me some, you know, off-Broadway songs. There was this great song that I still have such a fondness for called Heroes from Angels, Punks and Raging Queens.
Oh, yeah. Elegies for Angels.
Oh, no. Three Guys Naked from the Waist Down.
Okay.
I was in year 12 at Xavier College.
Oh, dear.
It was great to have him give me some material that I've never seen before. He was obviously on his way to becoming the leading man that he is now, and having gone to Whopper and having understood what it is to be a boarder at Xavier, a school like that. And he gave me some monologues, and next thing I know, I'm auditioning and expecting not to get in because I'd heard that people try for 3 and 4 years and sometimes still don't get in. And I got in first time. And then I'm over in Perth and I'm meeting you.
Yeah. Well, I auditioned 3 times, just so everyone knows. It took me that long.
First time, baby.
Yeah, I know. Well, you know, I don't think they let Perth people in first time. I'm joking. I wasn't ready. And the rest is history. That's awesome.
Yeah, and then it was that thing of, like, getting the call from Dennis Follington. He'd chosen our year as a sort of as his
final
as he exited basically and David King took over, and he started when I started, and Crispin Taylor. And I was over in Perth, and I was like, oh, I'm living in Perth now, you know. Like, it was one thing to audition for WAPA, but then to like
live there,
be on you know, 4,000 miles kilometers away, and but it was three of the, as you know, and everyone who has ever heard anything about WAPA, just three of the
best
years,
the best and poorest years of your life.
Yeah. So much Turkish bread and
so
dip.
Much from and dip.
How much is that Turkish
bread?
Like
$2.50. It's on Beaufort Street.
Yeah.
But there's a Turkish shop there. You get $2, well, probably more now, but $2.50 for a Turkish bread and some, like, the most garlic hummus dip you've ever had.
Yeah.
And a cask of, like,
Goon.
Rotten. Hey, look, I'm going to move you on to the Ticket A42 test.
Here we go.
Great thing about this test is everyone gets 100%. Because there's no wrong answers. So the first question is about the kid in A42, which references the name of the show, and my moment that I knew that I wanted to be a performer. Everyone seems to have one. What's yours?
I saw Godspell done by Horsham High School.
Yeah.
And I was just totally transfixed.
Yeah.
And I went home and played the vinyl on repeat and like learn all the songs. And I remember standing in front of the open fire on the farm, just like singing my heart out and just probably using that little fire stoker as a microphone. And, you know.
What? How old would you have been?
Probably only like 7 or something like that. Yeah.
And then what was your first kind of big professional show?
Beauty and the Beast. Beauty and the Beast. At the Princess Theatre.
Yeah.
Where I'm about to open.
Yeah.
But the first time, it's like, it's such a dream.
Yeah.
I saw, Hugh Jackman there and Bert Newton and Robin Arthur.
Yeah, Robbie.
Rachel Beck.
Yeah.
And Michael Cormick. And. Yeah. I remember hearing Michael Cormick sing and just being like, whoa.
Yeah, big
I
want to
do that.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. It was amazing. So magical and so, you know,
Hugh Jackman was in mine because I saw Sunset Boulevard in Melbourne on a, you know, Christmas trip with my family, and I saw Deborah Byrne and Hugh Jackman in Sunset at the Regent, and just blew me away.
Yeah.
Blew me away.
Yeah.
No one knew what was going to become of Hugh Jackman. I remember there was buzz around him, but...
Yeah.
No one kind of knew.
Yeah.
And now look. Phenomenal. Hey, Al, tell me what's got your goat.
What's got my goat? Oh, God. I don't know. The first thing that comes into my mind is, how do you behave on social media? Like, you know, like...
How do you behave?
How do you behave?
Well,
I guess it just like I'm always confused about it.
How do you behave on social media?
Yeah, yeah.
No, how do you?
Oh, how do I? I don't know.
How do you behave on social media?
I don't know. Like it's really changed.
Yeah,
you know, like over the last however many years, we've all been using it since 2007 or 8 or thereabouts. You know, it was really just. I don't know. Like it's become a lot more industry push.
Yes, self-promoting.
Self-promoting and that sort of stuff. And I think a healthy amount of that is really good. But sometimes I just get a bit like, oh, I don't know. Like I don't want to use it for that. I just, it's a strange phenomenon.
It is. And I always find
it doesn't really get my goat. I'm left a bit.
Yes, it does. Oh. I can tell.
There's got to be something else that gets my goat. Something domestic. You know, people that wash dishes but don't actually wash them properly and you have to rewash them.
Yeah. Well, people that wash dishes with soapy water and then don't rinse them.
Yeah. And they're really great people. Like, it's not the people. It's just their tendency to not wash properly.
Yeah. Well, I just think dirtiness is gross. Full stuff. Like, people should clean things.
Yeah.
You know.
All things.
All things.
Keep it clean.
This is very superstitious.
Yeah.
So, lots of performers have superstitions around their work and the theatre. Do you have any?
Not a superstition. I mean,
or like a ritual.
You know, the Scottish play, all of that. But I ritualistically will find that most tongue-twistery, challenging, like, or it might be foot-tangling thing. I remember with Drowsy Chaperone, some of the, I mean, I couldn't necessarily go over my roller skating backstage before the show, but I definitely, there was like a couple of little progressions of tap that I had to do with Rowan Brown that he would just do with his eyes closed in his sleep. You know?
Damn him.
Standing on a pinpoint.
Dancing. Yeah.
But I, you know, found it really challenging having come to dance very late.
Yeah.
And I just needed to go over that. Like, I would go over it and over it and over it and over it.
Yeah.
I know in Next to Normal, there was, as the psychopharmacologist, my first bit of the show was this tongue
twistery.
Oh,
that little monologue of...
Yeah. You got to take the pink one with the round one. And
yeah.
I go over and over and over it.
Yeah.
Probably work myself into a bit of a stupor.
Uh-huh.
You know, but yeah, nothing where I'm like, you know, I've got to high five that person at that. I think it's show specific.
Yeah. Tell me the five things you can't live without.
My family.
Uh-huh.
And my friends.
Uh-huh.
And my music.
Yes.
And just generally like exercise and fitness and health and well-being, all of that wrapped into one on a daily basis.
And one more.
One more. I can't really, I mean, there have been moments where I've been like, maybe I should do something else.
Yeah.
You know, I really, you know, I'm not coping with this. But so far, I haven't been able to live without theatre. And music theatre.
That's a common one that of people that I've interviewed. And I like that.
Yeah.
I think that's important.
And
kind of it comes to people, you know, just here. It's not like they've thought about it.
Yeah.
Here
in the Wicked Dressing Room.
Here in the Wicked Dressing Room, the sound studio. A la Wicked Dressing Room. This is Diva Tanti.
Yeah.
So have you ever thrown a massive Diva Tanti?
Yeah. I can't really remember. Shamedly, I can't really remember what it was about, but I did have a bit of a tiff. I won't say who with, but I stormed to my dressing room and I remember slamming the door.
Will you say what production?
Yes. Uh-huh. Yeah, I'll fess up. It was Phantom of the Opera in London.
Yeah.
I'm so ashamed. But I did. I was pretty worked up and I just was enraged. I can't even remember what it was about. I really can't. But I was sort of pacing around my dressing room and I had a dresser whose name was Peter.
Uh-huh.
And he was 72 and he'd been dressing rows for 12 years consecutively. And he was so patiently just quietly sitting there in his little rug-covered throne that he'd set up for himself.
Yeah.
And he'd sit there with his gin and tonic and he'd just listen to me. The perfect counsellor. And he calmed me down. And, you know.
Amazing.
Yeah. I think that's... Yeah.
That's your Diva Tanti.
I'm sure there are others. If there's not, I'll make sure there are. You know, just so I've got more material.
Who is your phone a friend?
James Murphy.
Yes. Oh, I love James Murphy. James Murphy's like your old Xavier mate.
Yep.
Who's now married to...
my best mate.
To Neil Van Zyl.
We were in the boarding house together at Xavier. And
we
lived together as soon as I finished at Whopper back in 2004 in that place in St Kilda Road, right before he met Tennille.
Yep.
And he's been there for me ever since and Amazing. Always will be.
Yeah, and you were best man at his wedding.
Yes. Hopefully one of the groomsmen. Yep.
Well, and hopefully he'll be groomsman at your wedding one day.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Showbiz, showmance, show crush. So we all get them and they defy age, availability, sexuality.
Yep.
Have you got one at the moment?
Yes. Always do.
Do you have a few? Cool. Yeah, wow.
Simon Phillips.
Yeah.
I consistently get, and I know I'm not the only one. Yeah. There are dozens upon dozens of us who do fall madly in love with him every time we get into a rehearsal room with him. He's just, there's something about him that is completely intoxicating. Yeah. And
he's a director for people that don't know.
Yes, and he directed The Drowsy Chaperone. He directed all of the workshops and obviously the final production of An Officer and a Gentleman. Mm-hmm. And I've done a few other workshops with him, and it's just, it's he's got an amazing just the way he sits there, and he sits on his foot.
Yeah.
And he leans forward and he follows the expression on every actor's face. And even if you're not on stage, you just feel this immense support.
Yeah.
And he's like willing the creativity out of you. And it's just the most exciting energy to be with.
Yeah.
And he's has an incredible wit, and he'll bring anyone down to to some sort of crazy reality.
If they need to be.
If their ego is getting a little bit out of control,
yeah,
he'll make sure of it. And he's just got a heart
of gold.
The size of Everest.
It's
amazing.
Okay, Genie in a Bottle. Genie grants you three wishes. What are they?
To seriously reduce world hunger.
Uh-huh. Good one.
To wipe out... Reduce isn't enough. To
eliminate.
Eradicate.
Yeah.
Yeah. And also eliminate, eradicate the atrocities largely against women that happen all around the globe.
Okay. Wow.
I've taken this interview to another place,
it's good.
You know, if that's the case,
yeah,
it's you know, there's some shocking things, just unimaginable for most of us, things happening to lots of people, but especially women and young women in, you know, remote parts of the world, and some not so remote part of the world,
mm-hmm.
parts of the world, but very you know, underprivileged. And thirdly, a selfish one would be to have, something like, I don't know how to describe it, to feel like I have three wishes in a bottle at any given time, and that I actually have more the power that's available to me to do things that I often don't give myself credit for.
Yeah.
And I think most of us are in that sort of, you know, we're so powerful, and we are able to do so much in our life,
mm-hmm.
and too often we stand in our own way, and I wish that for myself and for all of us.
Wow. They are epic and amazing and unexpected. But thank you. That's full on. And switcheroo. You can ask me a question. I'll answer anything. I'm a bit scared. I always get so scared.
Okay.
I think I might take it out of the desk.
Okay. If you could perform in any role on any stage, what and where would it be?
I actually don't know. I find this so hard because people ask you all the time, like, what's your dream role? What's your dream role? And I don't really have one. I always wanted to be in Jesus Christ Superstar, and I got to do that. So,
right. But if you could, like, did you get to do it on the stage that you would...
No, I didn't. It was in South Korea, which is a great place to work and live, but it's definitely not.
Many of us have done that.
Yeah. I mean, I'd love to originate a role on Broadway, of course. I'm not quite sure what role. I'm not quite sure. I honestly just don't know.
Yeah.
I just love so many
but
roles.
But you have that vision of being on Broadway.
I reckon I can totally imagine myself doing it.
Awesome.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I do.
Yeah.
Yeah. Absolutely. Yes. Tony Sheldon style, you know.
MC and cabaret.
I'd love
something
to
like
be
that.
An MC
I can
cabaret.
Totally see you.
I'd love to. I'd love to play Frankenfurter, like in a really kind of off production of Rocky Horror, and I'd love to. I'd love to be in Rent at some point. I think I'm getting too old, but
You're wearing that stripy t-shirt.
Yeah,
you know.
Yeah, totally. Something kind of contemporary in its sound as well on Broadway.
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah.
A bit rocky.
Yeah.
Yeah. A bit in your face.
Yeah.
Yeah. A bit crutch heavy.
A bit crutch heavy. Tell me a secret skill that you have that nobody knows about.
Secret skill?
Yeah.
Oh.
Like, what are you really good at? That you just know you're really good at. It could be so trivial.
Oh. I don't know. Gosh. I know I'm really good at. I am totally stumped. I have absolutely no idea. What would that be?
I don't know.
why don't you know? Am I going to have to pass?
You
that's
might have
really
to pass.
Lame.
That's okay. That's No, that's all right.
I should have read this list before.
That's all right. This is called This or That, right?
Okay.
So you need to just fire off your answers without thinking about them.
Okay, I'm a good cook.
It's
a bit boring.
I'm a serious skill good cook.
But I really, I'm a good cook.
Okay. Who is this or that?
This or that.
Okay. Sweet or savory?
Savory.
Dog or cat?
Dog.
Tea or
definitely
coffee?
Dog. Definitely dog. Really don't like cats.
Okay.
Yeah.
Tea or coffee?
Tea or coffee? Coffee.
Mum or dad?
Mum.
Black or white?
Black.
In or out?
In.
Up or down?
Up.
Left or right?
Left.
Walk or run?
Walk.
Summer or winter?
I just said walk, but I meant run.
I know, I was surprised. You like to run.
I just said the first one. Sorry, what was it?
Summer or winter?
Summer.
Sydney or Melbourne?
Melbourne.
Beer or wine?
But Sydney too, because it's not Sydney or Melbourne. I love them both. It's too hard.
Okay,
it's
Sydney and Melbourne.
I really love Melbourne and Sydney.
Okay. Beer or wine?
Wine.
Diamonds or pearls?
Diamonds.
Under or over?
Over.
Love or money?
Love.
Chocolate or vanilla?
Chocolate.
Salt or pepper?
Pepper.
Boxes or briefs?
Briefs.
Paper or plastic?
Paper.
Christmas or birthdays?
Birthdays.
Kisses or hugs?
Kisses and hugs. Sorry, no. Kisses.
I love that you just keep changing them. Hot or cold?
Hot.
Boy or girl?
Boy.
Bad or good?
Good.
Yes or no?
Yes.
Wrong or right?
Wrong.
Mates or dates?
Mates.
Day or night?
Night.
His or hers?
His.
Me or you?
You. Because you are me.
Because you are... Ooh, yeah.
We're all one.
Hey, now, this is where we're going to shamelessly plug everything that you and I are
I've
working
already done
on.
That. I did that at the start.
So, Anything Goes is touring nationally throughout 2015. And let's say we hope 2016.
Too. Absolutely. Coming to Kalgoorlie.
You can go to anythinggoesmusical.com.au for ticket and tour details. You guys have a Facebook page. It's called Anything Goes the Musical. And speaking of social media and what to put on it, they also have a Twitter and Instagram page, at anythinggoesau.
And there's also a hashtag.
Yeah, hashtag kickau.
Kickau, I think it is. Yeah. I get a kick out of you.
I wondered what that was.
Yeah.
Okay, yeah, cool. Okay, hashtag kickau. I just want to kick each other or, you know. Alex Rathgeber has Twitter and Instagram. And if you want to follow him, what's your handle? I know, but I was just...
I think it's just...
Alex Rathgeber.
Alex Rathgeber.
Yeah. He's very...
R-A-T-H-G-E-E-R. I get so many versions of my name.
He's very responsible with what he puts on social media.
Yeah. I'm confused about what to put on.
And if you want to talk to me, John James O'Hara, on Twitter and Instagram, and please keep tweeting me and use the hashtag TicketA42 so I can see what you're saying. Also, if you want to know about anything we've spoken about today on the podcast, go to the aussietheatre.com website /ticket A42 and there's an information page there. You can also download the podcast on iTunes and rate it if you feel like you might like to do that. Alex.
Jono.
It's been such a pleasure.
So good. You're amazing. You've got this radio show.
I know.
It's so cool.
No, I know, I don't mean I know I'm amazing. I mean that the radio show is amazing. We're going to take a little photo.
Yes.
Thanks for being my guest.
Such a pleasure.
Chookers for anything goes.
Thank you so much. And I'll see you there.
See ya.
See you, mate.
This podcast was produced by Matt Edwards for AussieTheatre.com.